Om sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. This verse has an odd swara, we're at 190, so I'm just going to chant it just in little segments. It's hard to go all the way through this one. So just repeat us after me. Tadishtam, tadishtam, eshtavyam, maya mayatvasya, mayatvasya, samikshanat, samikshanat, ichan, naapi, agnyatvat, nechet, kimichan, itihishrutam, tat ishtam, eshtavya, maya mayatvasya, samikshanat, ichan, ichan api agnyavat na itchet kim ichan iti hi shrutam. I have to kind of remind you of where we are here. The question that has been being discussed is whether knowledge is takes place through the removal of advaita, the removal of duality, the non-perception of duality, if that's what is required for knowledge, or is it the recognition of the self, or is it both? So it's gone through a lot of verses along these lines. You say, it can't be just the removal of duality. If it's just simply the removal of duality, then even in deep sleep, you become a jnani. Right? Because if you go to sleep, there's no duality present, and so that should do it for you then. Right? And then you can say, if it's, how does he say for this other one? If you were to say, it's both. Both are required. Then this is the one that we had a little trouble with. This is what Vijayaranya is saying. He says, if the occurrence of knowledge, for knowledge to arise, is both are required, the recognition of the self, of the Atma, and the removal of duality, then he says, if that were the case, then a pot should have self-knowledge. You remember this one? Okay. You probably don't remember. So it says, ubayam militam vidya. If both are necessary, the removal of dvaita, of duality, and the gaining, the recognition of the self, if both of these together are necessary for knowledge, then a gata, adiha, pa, etc., should at least have half knowledge. Aradavidya bhajinaha sihu. They should have half knowledge. Sakla dvaita vismatehe. Because for them, for pot, there's not going to be any perception of duality at all. And then the atma is there. It's kind of an aparoksha atma. So anyway, this was kind of an odd argument. I didn't quite get it. Okay. And then he went on to talk about again, saying, then he says, in verse 189, he says, if you should come around to saying that it's the recognition of the self is what is necessary for knowledge, if that's what knowledge is, then, you know, rest happily. Be happy, because now you're agreeing with me. If you come around to that position, then Bhavasukhi says, you be happy now. That's good. Good. And then he says, it's kind of interesting, he says, Dushta Chittam Nirunja. Shade. If you need to control the impure thoughts, if you still say, but I need to control my impure thoughts, then go ahead and control them. Now, the idea here is, how Vidyaranya is approaching this. If the person comes and says, yeah, but I still need to control my impure thoughts, maybe even bring them quiet so that I can have samadhi, you know, and get rid of duality, whatever they say. Say, fine, you control, go ahead and control your thoughts, gain the antakarana shuddhi, the purity of mind that is necessary in order to gain this knowledge. Right? Because in order to gain knowledge, your mind has to be present. It has to be abiding. And so if you need to work on your mind to make it pure so that it can gain this vritti, this recognition really of the satyam mitya, this recognition of the soul, then you go ahead and do that. We have no problem at all with that. You go ahead and work on your antakarana shuddhi, you know, work on the way that you're living in the world. You go ahead and do all of that. There's no problem with that. He says now in this verse, Tadishtam, that is desired by us too. That's desired. That's fine. And he says like this, because samikshanat, because the clear seeing with clarity, samikshana, ikshana means seeing. Samikshana, ikshana means samyak ikshana. It means seeing thoroughly, seeing clearly, seeing with understanding. So because seeing with understanding what? The maya mayatvam. Maya maya means the condition that this world is maya. Maya maya means as adjectival, that the jagat, this whole creation, is nothing but maya. It's mitya. That is something which needs to be seen. That's desired by us too. So there's no problem. You work on your antakarana shuddhi, work on all of these things. We have no problem with that. What is required is that we see this whole creation as maya. And that is desired by us too. So you need to be able to see that. If that is seen, then he says, once that is seen, now he's going to the second line of the verse. Remember this chapter 7 is an exposition on one verse. We're a little over halfway through this chapter now. Okay.
What was that verse?
We're almost two-thirds through. And now we're really involved in the second line of the verse. And the second line is, Kimichan kasya kamaya shariram anusanjwarate. Kim ichan. Desiring what? Kasya kamaya. For whose desire? Desiring what? And for the desire of whom? Shariram anusanjwarate. One worries about the body, etc. One worries about, one gets engaged and gets feverish, you know, gets worked up over the body and over your relationships in the world. Desiring what? And for whose desire does all of this feverishness take place? All of these concerns take place. And so now, what he's saying is, ichan api ajnanavat.
Cabin, the cat has come. If she came faster than me.
Yes, is she inside?
Yeah, she's on the other side.
That's all right. Just let her be. Yeah. She loves it. We love her and she loves us. I wanted to be able to just be here again. Just let her alone.
It might be the sandwiches, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
Pushing a camel to the cat. I don't know.
Probably.
Probably understands that.
Better than.
I spoke Spanish to a dog once and it understood.
Yeah, smart dog. Yeah, a lot of people are wondering what's up.
And we should tell them cat Leela.
This is a cat break.
Yes, we have to deal with this, it's all right. Let me just translate this and then I'll tell you about it. Ichen api ajnanavat. Even though desiring, even though desiring, one does not desire like an ajnani. That's exactly what it says. Ichen means desiring. Api, even though desiring, na ichet ajnani does not desire ajnanavat. Like an ajnani. The desires are different. Kim ichen iti hi shrutam. That's what's meant in the shruti. That's saying, desiring what? See, all of these arguments, all of the arguments that have come so far are trying to establish the fact that a jivan mukta, somebody who has knowledge, will still live in the world, will still experience the world, we'll still have a mind, we'll still have a thought, we'll still have prarabdha karma, we'll still have desires that rise out of the prarabdha karma. Remember the prarabdha karma, the karmas that caused you to take this birth. And so those karmas can also bring about desires. Like, just think of it. You have a mind, you've got a body, you have sense organs, you have thirst, you have hunger. You know, if you're thirsty, you'll have a desire to have some water. You know, if you're cold, you'll have a desire to become warm, like that. Where is she?
I don't know.
Let's see what
she's
doing.
In the hallway.
Okay, it's all right then.
She wants to go and be in the bathroom.
Oh, she does? Okay.
She's very attached to her now.
Who is? What?
She's the Vidya. The Vidya's in the bathroom.
I want one of these sandwiches.
Desire.
Oh, he's so sweet. Okay. What's so interesting about this, I think, is that Vidyaranya, during his time, I think he was 12th or 13th century, right?
Mm-hmm.
This problem must have been there then, because it's a problem in the yogic system, Sankhya Yoga, where you think that knowledge has to do with the removal of duality. Part of this comes about the non-experience of duality. In the yoga system, the prakriti, this creation is considered to be real material. Yoga is dvaita, it's pure duality. The yogic system. And so the prakriti, which is responsible for this whole creation, is itself beginningless. Right? It's beginningless and it's made of sattva, rajas, and tamas, and so it's also dual. The prakriti is dual. And they look at the purusha, the atma, which is very similar to the Vedantic atma, the sat-chit-ananda, except they say there are many of them. Like you have an atma, you have an atma, you have an atma, you have an atma. So it's a weak system, actually, but in terms philosophically, it doesn't hold up well to any type of scrutiny. But nevertheless, the idea is this, that the prakriti has to be brought into a state of absolute quiescence. And how that would work is that in your mind, through a process of antakarana shuddhi, which he's addressing here, where he says, all right, you go ahead and take care of the antakarana shuddhi and all of that. Right? You take care of the antakarana shuddhi and all of that. We don't mind that. That we're right on board with that. But what they say is that you'd have the antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind, and then you do meditative practice, one of pranayama, the practice of samadhi, to remove the experience of duality, so that the mind and body and sense organs actually come into a state, the sattva, rajas, and tamas come into a state of absolute quiescence, so that the duality is no longer experienced. And it is in the absence of the experience of duality that there is enlightenment. And so I think he's probably addressing the Sankhya Yoga here. And so what Vidyaranya is saying, all of the antakarana shuddhi, all of that is fine, it's all mitya, doesn't make any difference. We agree that that antakarana shuddhi has to take place, that purity of mind has to take place so that your mind is available for knowledge. But the knowledge is not something that's brought about by the removal of duality. The knowledge is brought about by the recognition of the self. And this creation itself is viewed as mitya. Right? This is where the satya mitya comes in. This creation is not, all of these names and forms and this duality that we experience is not real. You know, not real in the sense that it doesn't have any being, any substance of its own, separate from the Atma. Whereas in the yoga system, this creation has a real substance that is beginningless and it's subject to change and duality, but it is its own substance, and the Purusha, the Atma, is another substance. Right? The Atma is looked as absolutely pure, infinite consciousness, but there are many of them, which is logically problematic. Right? But so in that system, this creation has to disappear in order for you to have knowledge. In order for you to, not knowledge, but in order for you to be free. Right? Whereas the Vedanta, the Upanishads won't say that at all. It's not that you have to remove the duality. If you remove the duality, the experience of duality, well, you might, in deep sleep you do that. That is not our problem. The problem is the non-recognition of the self. The recognition, of course, of the self is the recognition that I am the whole. Because this is something else to understand, which in the yoga system, the recognition of the self is the recognition simply of the Purusha, the Satchitananda, conscious Atma, which is freed from the prakriti, freed from duality. That is the recognition of the self. For us, the recognition of the self is the recognition I am the whole, because this is nothing but the self. Right? Just like if you take a clay pot, the pot is nothing but the clay. There's nothing but clay there. The pot is mitya. It's totally dependent on the clay for its being. This creation is mitya. That's what we mean by maya. It means that its order, its reality is mitya. That means that there's nothing here but me. What that means in terms of the sat-chit, that means that in terms of satyam, sat is the easiest to understand this. When I say I am, those words I am are descriptive of me, right? They're descriptive of my being. It's a label, I am. Now this amness that is being labeled, I need to recognize, is not different than the isness which I attribute to all objects. I give isness to everything. It is, it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. the beingness that I divide up in terms of all of the names and forms as though because there's a name and form there, it is. What gives it its isness is the name and form. That's what we think as an Ajnani. What gives me my amness is this name and form. This body gives me my amness. Rather than seeing the amness as a noun, as what actually is here, the amness which, in fact, everything enjoys, the amness which is isness. For instance, if I say, I am, that's an what we call a paroksha. That's swetta siddha. Am I amness? Is self-evident. Nobody's showing that to me. That's something that is bottom line. That I exist is bottom line. And that amness that I give to the creation in terms of isness is also bottom line. Right? It's something that it's at the bottom of everything. It's something I absolutely take for granted. But now if I ask you to object to tell me, do you see isness? Say, no, I don't see isness. I only see names and forms. But all of them exist. But what I'm saying, what the Vedanta is saying, is that the isness that you give to all of the names and forms that you see is the amness that you are. There's no objectification. You can't objectify the amness. But everything, you can't, so I could say like this, I can't objectify the amness, which is the isness. So say if I say, instead of I am, I say I is. And then if I say I is, then everything equally enjoys the isness. You see that? Instead of using the word am, I use the word is. I is. So now is labeling me, my being. Now that isness that I label as myself is the very isness that all of this enjoys. So that's the understanding. So what Vidyaranya is saying here, in order for one to gain moksha, liberation, knowledge, I have to recognize myself, which is the self of all beings. That's what the self is. I have to recognize that this awareness that I am is the awareness in which everything exists. It is the awareness which is the awareness, the being, that everything else enjoys. If I don't recognize that, then this awareness is going to be differentiated separate from something or belong somewhere to something. Right? If it's not the awareness, the being, that everything enjoys, then only something enjoys it. Then it's limited. But if it's the awareness that everything enjoys, then the satyam mitya is here. So that's what I have to see. I have to recognize that this self that I am is the very being which this body, mind, sense organs enjoys, and it doesn't stop there. The being that I am would only stop at the body, the mind, the sense organs, if the body, the mind, the sense organs contained it and were different than it. Right? If this body was different than consciousness, separate from consciousness, then it could contain consciousness. But if it's not, if the consciousness is not contained by the body, it's not like this isn't a vessel holding some consciousness, then what's to separate my consciousness from your consciousness? In fact, there is no my consciousness. I am the consciousness. It's not my consciousness. This is the key. We say my consciousness, not my consciousness. I am the conscious being. That's different, isn't it? If I say I am the conscious being, that's different than saying my consciousness. If you say my consciousness, then we think, oh, the mind's consciousness or the body's consciousness. As though the mind is the container of the consciousness or the producer of the consciousness. Or the body is the container of the consciousness, the producer of the consciousness. Now the consciousness is the being which the body enjoys. It's the being which the mind enjoys. It's the being which the space enjoys, which the rug enjoys. Right? But the difference between the rug and this person is that the rug doesn't have a sukshma sharira, doesn't have a subtle body. It's like the difference that if I hold up a... I like this one for really understanding this differentiation in the creation. If I hold up a mirror and a rock to the sun, both the mirror and the rock are inert. Neither one of them is the sun. They're both equally inert. But the mirror reflects the sun and the rock doesn't. That's the difference between a subtle body and a rug. Right? The mind reflects consciousness. Right? The rug doesn't. And so humans, human beings, plants, animals... yeah, come here, come on. Human beings, plants, animals have a subtle body. They have a subtle body. The rug, the space, doesn't. But all of them... She'll get your toe. But all of them... Okay. All of them equally enjoy sut. All of them equally enjoy consciousness, in fact. This is another thing we don't understand. All of them equally enjoy consciousness. If you have an imagination, the entire imagination is known. If you have people in the imagination, those people not only are known, they are knowers. Right? If you have an imagination, say you're having a daydream, you have an imagination, the whole imagination, everything in the imagination is known, right? But the rocks are not knowers, right? The chairs are not knowers. The rugs are not knowers. The couches are not knowers. The people are knowers. The people are knowers. The plants are knowers in a limited way. The insects are knowers. The animals are knowers. So there's animate and inanimate objects in the imagination, in the daydream. But what is common is that every single one of them is known. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. Even in your experience in this room, everything is known. That is the chit. The sat chit. The sat is everything is. The sat is chit. Everything, not only is, everything is known. There is nothing away from is known. There is nothing away from sat chit. Sat chit is the clay of the pot. That is what is here. That is the substance of what is here, and that is who I am. I am the sat chit. Sat chit, the consciousness being, can't be objectified as a name and form, but it is the very clay of the pot. It is the very thing that is here. And it is self-evident. That is the me. The sat chit is the me experience. When you say, I am a conscious being, I am me, this very personal me, what makes me me, that is the sat-chit, that is the swarupa, that's the very nature of sat-chit. And it is this sat-chit that is the self of all of this. This sat-chit, which is me, needs to be known. When that is known, I recognize I am the whole. When I recognize I am the whole, then what is all of this? If I say I am the whole, what is all of this diversity then? Right? Because I am set, which is chit. But then there's this display of diversity with animate and inanimate objects. With things that are coming into birth and death, continual change. What is all of that? What is the jagat? Say the jagat is maya. Maya is what? Maya is mithya, that which Ya ma iti maya. They go, ya ma iti maya. That which is not, that is maya. Means this, which has no independent being of its own, that is maya. That which depends totally for its being upon the sat-chit, upon the satyam, that is maya. Pot form is maya, clay is satyam. Namarupas of the creation are maya, which enjoy that have the order of reality of mitya, means totally dependent upon me for its being. That's what all of this is. What is the drishtanta, the illustration we have for it? It's dream. Dream is the best. That is maya. The dream comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. It has no sat-chit of its own. I am the sat-chit. It is a manifestation of knowledge. Creation is a manifestation of infinite knowledge. That infinite knowledge has me for its being. That's the satyam mitya. And so this is the now this is the understanding. Then he says, "Kim ichan," from the verse. This is what is meant in the verse. Desiring what? I already am everything. Which graham cracker do you want? Right? Do you want the giraffe, or do you want the elephant, or do you want the dog, or do you want the cat? It's still all graham cracker. Desiring what? So for the jnani, that kim ichan, so he says, this is what is meant by the kim ichan, and what has to be understood here is that this desiring what means that there is no real duality. I am the self of the whole. And so now, the thing is, I can say all of that still experiencing the duality, right? Still experiencing the duality. The experience of the duality does not negate the Advaita, right? Experience of duality doesn't do anything to the sat-chit. The satyam mitya, if you've got the satyam mitya, there's still duality. So there's duality, but the duality is non-dual. The self of the duality is non-dual. Everybody see that? So now, if I, as a jnani, I have a desire in this creation, that desire is going to be as mitya as the creation. And who is the desire? This is what we're going to go on now. Desiring what? And kasya kamaya. And who is the one desiring? The desire of whom? Desiring what? And desire and the desire of whom? Now, this is the thing. Before we go to the next verse, just to make this clear. If you say, I am the sat-chit, that is me, then this body, mind, sense organs, ahankara, right, is mitya. It's here. It's functional. It's not to negate it, but it's to put it into its proper classification. It's mitya. Right? What am I desiring? It depends on who you say the I is. I, the sat-chit, am not desiring anything. And what is there away from me to desire? And who would be desiring? Right? So all the desired and the desiring have to take place within duality. I can't be desiring anything. I am you. Right? I am the mind, I am the body, I am the sense organs, and I am the object. I am both the subject and the object. So who is desiring what? There's no dvaita there for there to be, there's no duality there for there to be an object of desire and a desirer. So who is in desiring what? And why would I get engaged in this body in order to and get all worked up. This anisvatsanchrodaya means to get feverish, you know, to get overheated. to get feverish and overheated over this samsara. You know how we get overheated, that when I was talking on Thursday on this the vega, how kama and krodha, kama is desire, krodha is anger. You know? How kama, how raga and dvesha, these likes and dislikes, create what we call vega, a force where, as Shankar was describing, what does vega mean, this force of desire? Well, if it's the force of a raga, of a desire, that's where he describes like this. Your eyes get really big, and your skin, you get this horripilation on your skin, and you're kind of all excited, and, you know, your eyes are popping out of your head, that type of thing, and your mouth is like that. That's he describes it. Okay. What is krodha like? Krodha is where your eyes get really small and beady and become bright red, and your breath becomes... He describes this, right? That's krodha. He says, that's the vega. That's the force that kama and krodha have. And here, in this verse, that's the anisvajvare. You get overheated by these things. Why would that happen? Desiring what? And who is desiring in order for this type of engagement to take place? He says, no, this won't happen. But desire will take place. It's just not, it's not a binding desire. Desire will take place because you have a mind, because you have a body, because you have sense organs, because you have prarabdha karma, because you're experiencing life. Desire will take place, but non-binding desire, it's called dugdha bija, birth seed desire. This is the difference between a binding desire and a non-binding. The binding desire is, I want this so that I can be happy. And they mean it. I want this so that I can be happy. Non-binding desire is, happily, I want this. I am happy. I am full, I am complete, I want this. If I don't get it, fine, I'm still happy, I'm complete. That's it. If I'm happy and complete, I can want this. The problem is if I'm not happy and complete, and I want this to become happy and complete, that's binding. That's the difference between the desire of an ajnani and the desire of a jnani. That's why they say, he says here, even though desiring, that desire is not like the desire of an ajnani. So, this is so, has so many little repercussions, this understanding this properly. Because actually, to understand this means that if you have self-knowledge, you are still a person. You are a real person. You don't become odd. Honestly, you don't become odd. You're still an engaged person who is living in the world, whatever your parabha is. You might be living in the world as a sannyasi. You might be up in the Himalayas as a sannyasi. You're still a person who is living in the world. You may be married with children, living in New York City, you still are a person, you're still engaged, you're still living in the world. The difference is what? The difference is that the Ajnani doesn't know the self, doesn't know myself. The Jnani does. That knowledge makes a huge difference in terms of my freedom, my sense of well-being. For the jnani, myself is always the same. It's changeless. The problem is not there. The problems that I experience in the world, whatever they are mitya. They can be there. It's not that there aren't problems in the world. There are problems in the world. There's problems having a body. There's problems having a mind. There's problems taking care of things. You know, it's not like for the jnani, everything becomes fine. It's the same mess as for the Ajnani in terms of the world, the nature of the world. But there's a mid-tattva there. The mid-tattva is this. It's not just, oh, this is all an illusion. That's not at all what I mean. It's that those problems, in spite of those problems, you are full. In spite of those problems, you are ananda. Because you've recognized yourself. The difference is, for the jnani, yourself is not changing. Your self-experience, yourself is not changing. And when I say your self-experience is not changing, the reason I say those words is because the self is aparoksha, it's self-evident. And so once you recognize yourself, you recognize, I'm not changing. This me doesn't change. The ananda that I am is a stable ananda. You know, the world is changing all of the time. And you are engaged in the world. Your mind enjoys more shanti than that of a ajnani. Because, not because you don't have a mind, or because you have a better mind than the ajnani, it isn't that at all. It's that your mind is not searching for ananda. Your mind is not dependent upon the world to make you full. And so you are engaged in the world, but you don't need it to make you full. The ajnani is beating their head against the wall. Because you're asking the world to make you full, which is itself is a huge problem. But what makes the problem even worse is that the fullness doesn't exist in the world for that to work. Right? So the whole thing is one big, grand illusion. Mm. It's a big, grand illusion. You could say, well, it would still be really hard if I had to seek my fullness out in the world. But what if the fullness was in the world? That would still be hard. What if the fullness, the ananda, actually did exist in the world? Like there was a fullness object. My fullness object was there somewhere. And I had to seek that out. That would be a big task. It would be harrowing. But at least that would be the game, and there would be the possibility of winning it by somehow grabbing onto this thing. And that's be a kind of an odd kind of win, because even if I was grabbing onto it, it's still finite, right? Because it's a thing. But say there was somehow some sort of fullness in the world, but that is not the case. I behave as though there is. I grab onto the thing only to end up with the thing and not the fullness. that's what happens over and over and over and over again. I end up with the thing. I get a little blast of fullness, but that's all it is, just a little lesha, a little speck of fullness, little moment of fullness, and then I'm just left with the thing without the fullness. That is the samsara, that is the grand illusion. And the ajnani is trapped in that illusion. Now, you're trapped in that illusion until you recognize the source of the fullness, until you find the source of the fullness, and that's really the pot at the end of the rainbow. I mean, that's what all of the myths talk about. You know, the pearl, the mother of pearl at the bottom of the ocean. All of these things are what we're seeking. You know, is where is the ananda? Where is the ananda? Where is the ananda located? What is the difference when the jnani discovers the ananda is my being? You know, it's my being. And my mind is never away from my being. That's a totally different reality, you know? So the desire on the part of the jnani is very different, very different than the desire that the ajnani has. One takes it for seriously, and the other takes it for what it is, not asking the creation to give what it doesn't have to give. And not asking, you know, this is another interesting thing. The mumukshu also doesn't have the heart to ask the creation to give what it has realized. The mumukshu has realized, the one who desires liberation has realized that this creation can't give me what I need it to give me. And that's the dark night of the soul for the mumukshu, because the creation can't give me by its very nature what I need, and I don't know then what will free me from that. But for the jnani, so the mumukshu and jnani both have that in common. They both know that the creation can't possibly give the ananda that I seek. The mumukshu doesn't know. The jnani has discovered. The jnani has knowledge and knows I am the ananda that I seek. And so now, say my mind recognizes that I am the ananda that I seek. And then, as ananda, I want this. Oh. That doesn't mean anything. See, I'm already the ananda, so happily I want this. And if I don't get it, that's fine also. It's really like the helium balloon. I can fully engage, fully enjoy, and when it goes, then I let it go. You know? And even if you're maturing in your knowledge, there comes a time where you want this thing, and there's a little sting to it, because just habit. And then you let it go. And then as your mind kind of matures in your knowledge, you let it go more easily. And then after a while, you enjoy it, and you let it go, and you don't notice. There's no sting, that's all. There's just no sting. The sting, that sting is, even in spite of knowing, that sting comes just because of it's habitual. And that's where nididhyasana and all of these things, and more shravana and all of that, as to just let the mind naturally mature in its own knowledge. So, oops, I thought I was going to do so well today with that.
You did.
No, did I only do one verse?
Yeah, but that was...
That was a big verse.
Well, okay. Well, next week. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.